You are listening to the Hiking Radio Network, where we talk the walk with shows by hikers about hikers for everybody.
The Hiking Radio Network? If you haven't checked it out yet, it's time that you do. You will find links to the other shows in my show notes as well, but you got to go check them out. Mighty Blue on the Appalachian Trail, the ultimate midlife crisis. That's Steve Adams, and he has literally hundreds of episodes for you to binge. He talks to hikers who have thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail, among other things. Check out Jester's Section Hiker podcast. She talks to hikers that are out there taking on these long trails just one section at a time. And go dance upon the earth with Anna Mudbutt on the Trail Dames podcast. I've had the honor of being on her podcast and vice versa. And stay tuned for new shows that we're going to be adding to the network soon.
Guess what? We have a Hiking Radio Network trading post now. At the trading post, you can find t-shirts and hoodies and coffee cups with your favorite show's logo on it. Yes, you can find some Hiking Unfiltered things there. I'm so excited about that. But you can also find one with Mighty Blue on the Appalachian Trail. You can find just Hiking Radio Network and anything that you buy there on the Hiking Radio Network trading post does go to help support our shows and help us to bring you more content. So thank you in advance for doing some retail therapy. Check it out. There'll be a link for you in the show notes.
Welcome to Hiking Unfiltered, getting real on the trail. I am Courtney, aka Unfiltered, and we're here to explore the trails together. Dive into not just the how-to of hiking, but also the why. Welcome.
Welcome to episode number 52 of Hiking Unfiltered, Getting Real on the Trail. I am your host, Unfiltered, and today I'm going to be talking with Chris Roll Tide Marshburn. Chris had a career change later in life, and it is a dramatic career change. I'm going to let him tell you about it. Today, he's going to be answering the question, what is it like to work on trail?
So welcome to the show, Chris. Thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you so much. Sam, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be part of the conversation.
Yeah. So tell me first, because I always like to start with this. Do you have a trail name?
I do.
Okay. What's your trail name?
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. So I'm guessing that you're a Florida State grad. I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah. How did you know? How did you guess? Yeah.
Okay. So you're a Bama boy, huh?
I did not go there, but I'm a fan nevertheless. I have a lot of Alabama connections. My son and his wife went there. So my mother lives there.
Okay. Gotcha. So tell me about your journey into hiking. How long have you been a hiker? When did you start getting obsessed like the rest of us?
Well, my really entry into hiking and backpacking did not begin until really I was in law school. And I was in law school in Nashville at Vanderbilt. And interestingly enough, I started going over to the Great Smoky Mountains. And that was my first experience hiking and then backpacking. Fell in love with it. Tried to do as much ever since. Went to a lot of national parks and hiked and backpacked. And then having two children and job kind of got in the way of that for a long time.
As it does.
Yes, as it does. But then after they were grown and I had more time, I sort of got back into it. And now I'm into it full time now.
Okay. Gotcha.
As a job.
Right. Yeah. So this is the part that was super intriguing to me. First of all, tell me about what it is, or tell us about what it is that you're doing. And as a job, as a hiker, I'll let you go ahead and explain what it is that you're doing.
Okay. Last month, I began my position here in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park as a ridge runner for the Appalachian Trail Conservancy. And I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar or have heard of ridge runners on the AT. But if they don't know, and I've encountered quite a few thru-hikers and other types of hikers that don't know, and I'm always happy to explain. We're sort of ambassadors for the Appalachian Trail. That's one way to put it. We provide information about the trail. We emphasize and educate Leave No Trace principles. We also help maintain the trail. Here in the Smokies, we help to maintain the trail shelters that we have. And also, most of the shelters have privies now, so we help maintain the privies. Very important. Mm-hmm. And those types of things. We also work with the park. And really, in the Smokies, the Ridge Runners work almost as much for the park as they do for the Appalachian Trail Conservancy. Because in the Smokies, as in many national parks, they're very understaffed. And so we are an additional set of eyes and ears for the park, you know, on the trail. Gotcha. So we can report to wildlife things, especially bear activity, which is always an issue here.
Right.
Those kinds of things. And any other things like dangerous conditions, somebody that might need search and rescue, that type of thing.
Okay. So how did you come to know about this particular job, and why did you choose to do that?
Well, the first time I found out about Ridge Runners was back in 2016. I intended to hike the entire Appalachian Trail back then. And so I took some time off to work to do that. And I was going to be a SOBO. So I started at Mount Katahdin, and I did make it all the way to the border of New Hampshire and Vermont. Mm-hmm. Which is about 486 miles. And by that point, my knees had been giving me quite a bit of trouble. And, you know, I wonder if this was the right decision, but I made the decision at that point, stop hiking, and maybe at another point in my life, start again. Mm-hmm. Because at that point I was 55, still had a lot of work, career to do, you know, and I was afraid, that if I pushed on that I might, you know, have a more serious injury or mess up my knees. And I wanted to, of course, continue hiking, you know, that kind of, and being active. So I just decided to stop at that point, and it, you know, it may have been a good decision, but of course, as everybody does that has to quit a long distance hike, you know, before they reach their goal, there are some regrets.
Right.
But then to get to the earlier question, that's where I found out about Ridge Runners, is that, and of course, you know, they're part very, significant part of the trail culture on the AT. But back at that time, never really thought about being one. But then later, when different life events happened and I had the opportunity to pursue work in the outdoor stewardship, that was one of the things that interested me.
Mm-hmm. So, as a Ridge Runner, it's a lot of different things that you're called on to do. What skill set do you feel like you brought to that is already serving you? And what are you feeling like you're just finding your feet now?
I think that one that I can, that first comes to mind is, I had a long career as an attorney, and specifically in litigation. Mm-hmm. I first began my career as an assistant district attorney, and then I did personal injury defense litigation for insurance companies. So obviously I had a lot of experience dealing with conflict, and resolving conflicts. mediations, that kind of thing. And, you know, you develop a sense of rapport with people. You're sensitive to issues, bringing out issues that are important, resolving conflict type situations. So I think that all helps in a job like this, because one of the main responsibilities we have is to engage hikers. And here in the Smokies, we have to check we're not enforcers, but we do check to see that they have the required permits that everybody has to have when they enter the park. People that are staying in the shelters that are not through hikers are required to make reservations, and so they have to have a permit, and we check those. And there may be other situations, maybe a hiker through ignorance or just for whatever reason is not practicing leave no trace principles, they're getting into conflict situations with other hikers. You know, for instance, somebody in a shelter's up past hiker midnight and, you know, being rowdy and all that kind of thing, and all the other hikers want to get to sleep. And so we try to, you know, to be a force for good in that kind of situation as well. So I would say that is one of the areas that comes to mind. Last year was the first really outdoor stewardship type experience I had. And that was in the White Mountains as a backcountry caretaker. So that's really was my entry point into this type of work.
So what did that involve, being a backcountry caretaker?
So I worked for the Appalachian Mountain Club, and I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's the largest outdoor organization, the oldest outdoor organization in America, founded in 1876. It's primarily in the Northeast and New England states. And somewhat like the ATC, they help manage outdoor spaces. They have lodges. They have campsites in areas like the national forests up in New England. I was in the White Mountain National Forest. The AMC has 14 backcountry campsites in the White Mountains. And I was stationed at one of them that was actually on the AT in the Presidential Range. So got to meet a lot of thru-hikers last year, which was a great experience. And again, that was one of the most favorite things that I came back with from the job is meeting all the hikers and engaging with people and helping them have a good experience. But in a similar way, a backcountry caretaker is responsible for that one particular site. They don't hike from site to site. So they're there the whole time. We were there for 10 days at a time. Then we would have 2 days off and come back for another 10 days. The backcountry sites in the White Mountains, most of them have a small fee attached. So we collected the fees. We helped manage the space because, as you can imagine, space is not unlimited. So you have to help find spaces for all the people. And at the height of thru-hiker season, we had 8 tent pads. And I don't know if you know what a tent pad is, but a tent pad or a tent platform is basically like a somewhat raised platform made out of wood. And the purpose of those is to limit the impact on the environment of people camping in the space. So, for example, in the site that I was responsible for, which was called the Naaman tent site, we had 8 tent platforms. But oftentimes there were quite a few more campers that were there, especially in the height of the thru-hiker season, when the thru-hikers that were going northbound would be coming through the White Mountains. And that was really like July, and some into August. And so there would be times when, we'd have as many as 40 through hikers at one time in one site.
At one site. Oh my gosh.
In one site. Yes. So, you know, that's a situation where you have to help people find places to stay. It was our goal never to turn anybody away. And I never had to do that. So everybody had a place to stay, and just helped them. You know, they would find a place in the woods that were near the platforms, and we would just, you know, try to find a site that would be the least amount of impact, and help them to keep it that way. Hmm. And also as a backcountry caretaker, quite a few of the campsites have composting privies. And that was a big responsibility for a caretaker is to maintain that privy and keep it going, because it's an entire system that basically takes the human waste that's deposited at that campsite and ultimately turns it into humus that's returned to the soil in the forest. Uh-huh. So by the time it's finished, it's completely clean, sterile, and we're able to distribute it in the forest. So everything's completely recycled.
Wow, that's fascinating. I actually thank you for that explanation, because I've heard of composting toilets, but I don't know that I've ever been walked through the process. So that's really interesting. So you're actually staying out at the site for 10 days at a time?
That's correct.
And was that alone, or was there another caretaker?
No, that was each of the caretakers we stay by ourselves at the site. We're given a cabin tent. So it's a large canvas tent that you can stand up in.
Right.
So it's a little more comfortable than like a backpacking tent.
Right.
And so most of our stuff stayed in the tent. We didn't have to hike it up every time. We also had a 2-burner propane stove, and the propane tanks are flown up to the site or hiked up to the site for the season. Mm-hmm. So we could cook a wider variety of things other than like just a backpacking meal over a single burner stove.
Gotcha. You were practically glamping.
Very, very. I guess you could call it that. Yes.
I mean, compared to a thru hiker. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes.
So when you were out there for 10 days at a time, did you find yourself struggling at all with loneliness, or did you just basically keep yourself super busy and social with the hikers that were coming through? What was that like for your mental state to be out there 10 days at a time?
Well, it's a combination of things. One thing that helps, and I think that this is true for most of the people that sought that type of work, it really helps to have sort of an introverted personality, mm-hmm. you know, where you're comfortable being alone. You like your space. And so I'm certainly that, even though as far as introverts go, I guess I'm more towards the extroverted side, because I do need interaction with people. Mm-hmm. And so at the particular site I was at, I got quite a bit of that. There was rarely a day that went by that there wasn't anybody at the site. Mm-hmm. And often there were many people at the site. When there wasn't anybody there, when I had downtime, when I wasn't keeping up the privy, or doing other things, I would have time to, you know, read. That's one of the things that I enjoyed about being there is I was sort of off the grid, mm-hmm. for the most part. I found I regained my attention span, you know, because I wasn't on an electronic device all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I actually read real books, you know, from hours at a time, which was something I had not done in quite a long time. And that was very enjoyable, very satisfying. So I got to do that. And also, and there was lots of people to meet and deal with. And in my particular case, I don't know if you're familiar with the hut system in the White Mountains.
Yes.
So one of those huts was near the campsite that I maintained. And so I could also go over to the hut and sort of interact with the people that worked in the hut, the crew there. And then people that came to the hut to stay would, you know, wander over to the campsite because they were curious about it. And so I would interact with them that way. So, you mm-hmm. know, there was always some kind of, always usually some type of interaction going on.
Gotcha. And how long did you do that?
So I was there for 4.5 months.
Okay.
From the first of June until the middle of October.
Did you go back multiple seasons or just one season?
That was the first time I went. So that's the first time I've done it. I may at some okay. point do it again, but that I did that last year. Before that, I was an attorney.
Oh, right. So as you're stepping now into the Ridge Runner role, obviously there's so many things that you've already learned when you were out there doing the caretaking that you can, you know, you can parlay right. into this new role. But are you finding that there is anything that is markedly different that you're doing now as a Ridge Runner?
I would say the physical activity aspect of it, because whereas being a backcountry caretaker, I was at one site and staying in one place most mm-hmm. of the time. You know, I would have to hike up and down. When I started my hitch, as a Ridge Runner, you're hiking every day from shelter to shelter. Uh-huh. So that's a lot more activity. Okay. So for example, what I'm doing, the Ridge Runners and the Smokies, we divide up the territory. For your listeners that aren't familiar, the Appalachian Trail runs basically through the middle of the entire park, long ways. It's about 72 miles total, mm-hmm. and divided by Highway 441 in the middle, which the Appalachian Trail crosses at a place called Newfound Gap. So for the next several weeks, I'm going to be responsible for the eastern or northern half, depending on your perspective, of the park. So I'll start at the far end at Davenport Gap, and I'll hike southbound towards Newfound Gap. I mean, the mm-hmm. reason that I hike southbound is because that way I will engage more northbound thru-hikers.
That makes sense, yeah.
So, and the way it works is that we're on trail for 4 days and 3 nights. So during that 4 days and 3 nights, I'll be covering that entire territory.
Gotcha. So then do you have do you have a similar schedule with the Ridge Runner where you're going X number of days on, X off, or is it a little more fluid?
So it's we get a little more time off actually as Ridge Runners. So it's 4 days on, and then we get 3 days off. That's downtime. So, mm-hmm. and that's really a good amount of time because, the Smokies is not the easiest hiking on the Appalachian Trail. I'm sure a lot of people can attest to that. So it does take it out of you, although it's enjoyable. So we have 3 days to rest and recover and, you know, have personal time. And then we're back on trail.
How are you finding, because you had that, how long ago was it that you were attempting your through hike of the AT?
2016.
Okay. So as you are starting this new journey as a Ridge Runner, are you finding that those knee issues are coming back to haunt you, or are you able, because you're not having to pack so much stuff with you, that you're not seeing that as much? Or?
Well, it's interesting. The pack that I carry as a Ridge Runner, because we have extra equipment that we carry. We carry a full size two-way radio that mm-hmm. We can communicate with the park headquarters. We have a saw that we can, that we use to take care of limbs and minor blowdowns that are on the trail. We carry bear spray. So things like that, plus some cleaning supplies that we have to carry for cleaning the privy and the shelters. So my pack is actually heavier. It's not exactly, it wouldn't qualify as ultralight under anyone's definition, but it's kind of weird is because I feel like that I'm actually now through, I guess, hard work and a lot of education on my own in actually better shape now than I was in 2016, which is, it's kind of sounds paradoxical. You know, I was 55 then and I'm 62 now. But I guess because of the knee problems I had then, I guess I was motivated to learn how to prevent that from happening.
So what are you doing to prevent that from happening? Because I'm sure, because it's only happened to me once on trail where I had a knee that just started screaming at me, and it wasn't one that I'd had problems with before. But tell me about what you learned about how to prevent that.
Well, one thing you could do is, of course, on trail, if you know how to, if you can learn how to use your trekking poles to kind of cushion your impact. And of course, it's really mostly the downhill that is the hardest on your knees. So trekking poles help there. Of course, the right footwear. But I stumbled upon a couple years ago an exercise program, and I'm trying to remember the person's name. But he goes, his nickname is called the Knees Over Toes Guy. and he has a YouTube channel, and he has a book that's on Amazon, and he's developed this knee strengthening program, I guess you would call it, a series of exercises, which are sort of unique, which are some exercises that you don't typically see in the physical therapy type videos on YouTube, but they're specifically targeted for the knee. And, you know, at first when I saw his videos, I was thinking that's kind of a gimmick, that surely that can't work. It seems too easy. but then I said, you know, what could it hurt to try, you know?
So
I got his book off of Amazon. It's, I think it's about 10 different basic exercises. And if you do them every other day consistently, it really does. It, at least in my case, it made a difference. Now, granted, I think most of my issues with my knees were like soft tissue related. So I didn't have any particular, thank goodness. I didn't have bad arthritis in my knees or joint issues, that would only be corrected by like surgery. But for the problems I had, it pretty much cleared up my knee problems completely, which is kind of hard. I knock on wood, which is kind of hard to believe, because I wouldn't think that, because I would think that as I got older, it would get worse. But this just goes to show that, that when you find the right program and you're consistent with it, it can actually be better. So I would encourage anyone to, that has knee issues, especially hiking, that just look up Knees Over Toes Guy on YouTube, and you'll see his videos, and you'll get the basic idea of what he's trying to do. And I think it would help.
That's a lot of people. Yeah, that's a great tip, because, you know, besides our feet, you know, the knees are probably the two most common reasons for getting off trail. You know, either our feet can't take it anymore or our knees can't take it anymore. So that's really good.
Well, I've got another, example of that type of thing, physically, because not only have I had knee issues, but I've had lower back issues. And I've, if you look at an MRI of my lower back, it's really messed up. So I have, what's called spondylolisthesis. So that's basically where one disc is sliding down on top of another and it misaligns it and it's impinging on a nerve. Also mm-hmm. have some arthritis, in my sacroiliac joint. And I think I've got it. There's another disc that's bulging. And it was giving me quite a bit of problems. And this would be, I'd say, 2019 through 2020 time period when it really got to be bad. Mm-hmm. This kind of goes along with my transition to a new line of work. So around that time, I was being treated by an orthopedic surgeon. I was doing some physical therapy. I even had some nerve blocks to my lower back. None of that produced any kind of lasting relief. And so it was really at the point where, should we consider surgery?
Mm-hmm.
So I remember going in for the surgery consultation with the orthopedic surgeon. And I'm very fortunate to have the type of surgeon that I did because he's very conservative. He said that, I've looked at your MRI and your examination. And I would say that because of the way your back is, I could do some surgery where I could do like a spinal fusion of two discs. And, he estimated that it would have a 50-50 chance of producing relief.
Uh-huh.
And he says, I would never do surgery under those odds. I will only operate on somebody if I have a 90% chance that it'll work.
Right.
And he said, my recommendation to you is to go do more hiking.
And you went, sold.
Yeah. So at the time, I was working, had a job, my legal career, my job. And, I was thinking, okay, that's nice. But, and then the pandemic hit. And, as a result of the pandemic and its effects, I was working in Memphis, Tennessee for an insurance company as an attorney. And there were two of us, and that insurance company decided that they would go around the company and do a reduction in force and, eliminate attorney jobs where they thought that maybe they could, save some money. Unfortunately, my job was one of them. And so that happened in the first part of 2021. And that's how I really got into this outdoor work in the first place. Because after that happened, I considered some other legal jobs. I had offers. But also I was somewhat burned out, from all the litigation work that I'd done for almost 35 years.
Right.
So, getting my position eliminated was really a blessing in disguise. Because it allowed me to take a step back, see where I was in my life, see where I was financially, and kind of to my surprise, I'd actually done a pretty good job of saving money for retirement. Despite raising two children and, putting both of them through their education debt-free. I decided, well, I don't have to work if I don't want to, or I don't have to be in a legal position. And in all the different legal positions I was considering, nothing just really felt right. I just could not see myself going back into that type of situation where it limits my autonomy and my time. So I said, well, why not look at jobs that are in the outdoors and outdoor stewardship, which is something I'm very passionate about, and see what's available. And that's how I first came across the Appalachian Mountain Club, because they post jobs all the time in outdoor fields, and found them. The backcountry caretaker position sounded like something that was right up my alley. And fortunately, you know, I was accepted into that program. And I will say this, for, you know, one thing that that I discovered when I was doing that job is there would be a lot of people that were, I would say, of a certain age that normally would never have considered doing that kind of work. Because when you come to, most of the time when you come to these campsites, and even when you meet like ridge runners on the Appalachian Trail, they're usually like in their 20s, you know?
Right.
So people think, well, that's not something I could do, or, you know, something I would consider. I could never physically do that. But really, when you take a look at it, I mean, people that are at later stages of life, if they're healthy, physically active already, if they, especially if they love hiking in the outdoors, it's kind of the perfect thing to do, you know, as a retirement thing. Or as a second career type thing. So I would really encourage anybody that's listening that is older, that loves the outdoors, that, you know, look at those jobs, because those outdoor organizations are very happy to receive applications from people that are older, you know, because as, you know, as older people with a lot of life experience, we bring a little something extra to the table in a job like that, that maybe a 20-year-old doesn't.
Very true. Very true. I have a lightning round of questions that helps us get to know you as a hiker. You ready for the lightning round?
Yes, I am.
Okay, awesome. Lightning round. Okay, so what is your favorite snack in your pack?
Honey buns, and the giant kind. And the reason,
the most bang for your buck.
Exactly. That's the most calories per ounce I think you can probably find, in a food that tastes good.
Is legal.
Yes. Is legal. Yeah. So, I mean, you can get 600 plus calories easily, you know, and if you're, in the middle of the day, your energy's kind of flagging on the trail, you know, have one of those, and you'd be surprised at the boost you'll get, at least for another hour, you know. So
right until the crash happened. Yeah. So do you hike in trail runners or boots?
Mid boots. So they're kind of lightweight boots. I have a pair of Salomons.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I know people love trail runners. I've tried them, but doing the kind of things that I've done, at least in the outdoors, I mean, on a thru hike, you know, I might consider trail runners, but, for jobs where I have to carry a little heavier pack, the boots, the extra support that the boots provide is really helpful. And especially, in a place like the White Mountains, where the trails are so rocky, so rugged, that extra support and firmness under your foot really helped me. So mid boots.
Okay.
Have worked out very well.
Do you, for your sleep system, do you like a hammock or a tent?
Tent all the way.
All the way.
And that's mainly because, I mean, I know hammocks can be comfortable, but, I sort of like the privacy of a tent, and I'm also a stomach sleeper.
That would be challenging in a hammock.
So a hammock kind of feels a little confining, you know, in that regard.
Gotcha. Okay. So, you must have heard a lot of trail names by now. What's your favorite that you've heard?
You've probably heard of him, Nimblewheel Nomad.
Yeah.
And, I'm not sure when this is going to air, but I'll just put this out there. I just found out yesterday evening, that he was hiking somewhere in Texas, and a truck hit him on the,
oh my gosh,
and injured him pretty bad, especially his legs. He's in the hospital right now. And if your listeners don't know who he is, he last year he set the record. Year before last, he set the year record as the oldest person at 83 to complete a through hike of the Appalachian Trail.
Right.
But he's hiked every other national scenic trail in addition to the Appalachian Trail, and he did it all after age 60.
Right.
So he's a pretty amazing individual. And I got an opportunity last year before I started my backcountry caretaker job to meet him because he lives in Alabama. So that was really a thrill to meet him and just discovered what an amazing person he is. And he was very excited that I was going to be going into outdoor work, you know, because it's a similar story that he had. He was a optometrist his whole life, and he worked in an office with no windows. And at age 60, he decided he can't, I'm doing this no more. He'd never backpacked before.
Right.
And he just started doing it. And the first big backpacking trip was from Key West to Canada, which is pretty amazing.
Right.
So anyway,
it is.
So he's injured. So if your listeners hear this in the near future, please send your prayers and healing vibes and all that good stuff for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. When you're out there now as a trail runner or a ridge runner, are you finding that you like to listen to things as you're out there other than nature? Do you put in your earbuds and listen to podcasts or music or books?
Well, normally when I hike, I love to listen to podcasts. But as ridge runners, we aren't allowed to use headphones during the day. And that's because we need to be aware of all that's going on, you know, around us on the trail. We need to be engaging with people. So if you're hiking in the woods and you see someone coming towards you and they've got a headphone and, you know, earbuds in, you know, and they're clearly listening something, you're not, you know, your first instinct is not to engage with them. So we want to be completely open and available to people. So we don't wear earphones on the trail, but I can, you know, in the shelter at night when it's time to go to bed. So I definitely, you know, still listen to podcasts, including this one.
thank you.
Yeah. I like hiking related podcasts. I like history related podcasts, true crime related podcasts, just whatever particular interest that I have at the time.
Gotcha. Okay. So when you're out there, and you might be getting even more familiar, of course, with the trails in the Smokies because of what you're doing, but do you like to use an app for orientation or an old school map or both?
Apps primarily, but I have a map, but I've gotten pretty comfortable using apps. So like the two that I primarily use, of course, when you're on a trail like the AT would be Far Out, which used to be Guthook.
Right.
And that's a great app. And then Guide GPS when I'm on other trails. And I find that helps, you know, just to make sure that you're on the right course. If you're on an unfamiliar trail and you need to make sure where you're going or how far it is to the next trail junction or whatever. It's a really good app.
Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. And I haven't ever used Gaia. Do they have the same capacity for users to leave information about water sources and things like that, like they do on Far Out?
It's not like, no, it's more a mapping and GPS and GPS finding app. There are lots of different layers though. And when I say layers, you know, it's like overlays on a map and they show different types of information. And so there's all kinds of layers that you can add to your map on Gaia. You know, they even have maps that have cell phone coverage for a particular area.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you caffeinate when you're out there?
I do.
If you do, do you like to take coffee or tea?
I'm not a coffee drinker. I've never liked coffee. I do like tea. but I also like sometimes in the morning tease a little bit much trouble. So I, true confession, I use caffeine tablets. And you know, I mean, it's as much as a caffeine as a cup of coffee, but you know, it does the same thing basically. And
gotcha.
And they work, you know. So
okay. So what's the next trail that you want to explore when you're not out there doing it as a job?
A couple. I think I would like to explore more of the West, and couple trails that come to mind are the Arizona Trail, because I've never really done any desert hiking, and I'd love to experience that. And also the Colorado Trail, because a couple years ago I went to Rocky Mountain National Park, and that's the first time I'd ever seen that part of the country, and was just blown away by it. So, you know, doing a long distance trail in that area would be awesome.
Yeah. What's your favorite kind of filter to use?
Sawyer squeeze.
Sawyer.
And smart water bottles.
The full size or the mini?
Full size.
Full size.
When it's ever going to be, this is a tip for people that don't know, and I think probably everybody knows this by now, but hopefully, if it's ever possible that the temperatures are going to be below freezing, stick that Sawyer in your sleeping bag with you at night. Because I've had that happen before.
Where
you forget to leave you leave your Sawyer out, and it's cold overnight, and the next morning it doesn't work.
Right.
And always have a backup too, whether it's, Aquamira or the Katadyn tablets or something that doesn't require a filter. You know, always urge people to do that too.
Okay, good advice. Thank you. And speaking of filters, how do you want to become more unfiltered?
Maybe being interrogated by podcast hosts.
That's a good answer, but that's a little bit of a skirting around actually answering the question.
Well, I knew the question was coming, so I think
you studied.
Yeah, I think another way would be one thing that I've never particularly done. I love to write. I've been told that I'm pretty decent at it, but I've never really written a lot about myself. So I'd like to get this year, especially with this position I have, I'd like to do some journaling and kind of open up that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sort of be transparent in the journal.
Mm-hmm. Well, that could make a really interesting, memoir down the road, because you already have a very unique perspective in changing careers at this point in your life, and such a dramatic change. So I think that could be something that a lot of people would be interested in reading for sure. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know it's taken a little bit of coordination to make this happen. I appreciate the flexibility, and I wish you the best of luck with your new career. It's just, I'm blown away by it. Maybe someday I'll end up taking something like that up myself.
Well, thanks, when I don't Sam. Have you're, to you're deal in, with, you're in Florida, right?
Yeah, I'm South Florida, just above the Everglades. Well,
a lot of Floridians come up to the Smokies in the summertime, so. Maybe you can do that.
Yeah.
Come see us.
Yeah. We'll see. I still have young kids at home that I have to deal with.
I understand.
So, yep. All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Chris, for coming on the show. I'd never had an opportunity to talk with a ridge runner before, so it was really cool to me to kind of get a glimpse into the day in the life of these people who we, occasionally run into when we're out on trail, but for the most part, they're kind of quietly in the background helping us have a fantastic experience while we're out there. So I really appreciate what he does, and what a great job, right? He gets to hike all day long and get paid for it. Nice work if you can get it.
I would love to talk to more unique individuals who are trail angels, who do trail magic, who like to do the trail maintenance. If you know somebody like that, or if you are somebody like that, please reach out to me. I'd love to have you on the show.
Thanks for joining me once again. If you are enjoying this podcast, or maybe it's even just the first time you've heard it, I would love to hear from you. You can reach out to me at hikingunfiltered@gmail.com. Tell me about your topic ideas, your guest suggestions, or maybe you would like to be a guest on the podcast. I love it if you gave me a shout out on your socials. You'll find links to my socials in the show notes. I am Hiking Unfiltered on Facebook and on Instagram. You can find me there, and I'd love to interact with you there. Can I ask you a favor? Please leave me a review, some stars, to help other people know that the podcast exists. Show them how to subscribe as well. You're going to find links in the show notes to the show sponsors that were mentioned. Go check them out. It does help support the show. That's it for this episode. Until next time, my trail family, happy trails.